The presidential motorcade has just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
How did you fare during the great government shutdown? I actually enjoyed my son's basketball game, cooked out on Sunday evening, made some burgers, and it was the first time we had warm weather in about a half a month under snow. Even though we're by the beach, with freezing temperatures for half of December into half of January. But it's funny that the shutdown occurred on a Friday and was all wrapped up by lunchtime on this past Monday. Because, you know, the bulk of government employees, especially non-essential employees, are usually off during the weekends. I mean, there's the bigger chunk of government employees do not work during the weekends. That's not to say that they are all off on the weekends, but more than not, they are. And why do we even have non-essential employees in the first place? I mean, the government should be small enough to have hardly any non-essential employees, in my opinion. But what's even more amazing is the fact that they went ahead and shut it down when there wasn't even an actual DACA bill. That's right. They were only negotiating one that hasn't even been written. So we effectively brought the Leviathan government to a screeching halt over an idea and a difference of opinion. We froze the pay of American citizens who are government employees, even military members who serve this country in order to create amnesty for illegal aliens who have crossed the border. Now, remember what we covered a few weeks ago, I think it was even last week, where many of the aspects of DACA are actual lies. They weren't born here as they should have been. The fact that they don't know their home country is part of the lie, too, because if they don't know their home country, it's because they were brought over here at such a young age, they just don't remember it. Remember in 2013 when the flood of Central Americans were pouring in? You remember that? Many children that were arriving across the border had no parents accompanying with them. They weren't born here. So the entire premise of DACA was pure crap from the get-go. They were given preferential treatment to those who aren't even citizens while penalizing patriots who serve us and should enjoy all aspects of their citizenship. So how did others make it through the great Schumer shutdown of 2018? I heard Jim Acosta from CNN. He was hit pretty hard. He had to go all weekend with an empty vending machine in the White House press room. So the heavy cost of a government shutdown is no nabs. Lance Crackerless. I mean, he tweeted out a picture of an empty vending machine, which I guess couldn't be replenished due to the shutdown. So I might go out of my way, send old Jimmy, some old Jimmy Acosta a bag of Andy Cap hot fries, maybe a plush Build-A-Bear and a Hallmark sympathy card over Mr. Grandstanding Activist Acosta to help his feels feel better. One reporter posted that the White House gym had a lack of towels. Maybe they should be better stewards of their existing exercising resources, as they like us to do with regards to the environment. Oh yeah, don't use up all the trees that are, you know, out there for rainforest or whatever. You better plant a tree when you remove a tree. Maybe you should plant a towel when you remove a towel. Who knows? For that to be the crux of the argument and the outcry over the government shutdown, pretty silly in my opinion. Many monuments couldn't even tweet. They couldn't even use social media because of the shutdown. They probably should have sprung for a smartphone and logged into the app. I mean, then you could do it anywhere, regardless of whether you're on the clock, in the office. I mean, I guess the social media operators that were hired can't type without being on the clock. I mean, the ATF headquarters account tweeted, due to the lapse in appropriations, this account will not be updated regularly. See justice.gov for updates. And I'd say that the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, yeah, that's a pretty non-essential service. What say you, Mr. David Koresh? The Truman Library, which I've actually been to, posted, due to the shutdown of the federal government, the Truman Library is closed and we are unable to use any social media channels. Again, I'm not sure how typing a tweet can be affected by the closure of government, but whatever. But the messaging was amazing on both sides because it almost did a flip-flop. Democrats had their talking points. I mean, every post that they had basically said the same thing. In a nutshell, it was basically like Elizabeth Warren and Chuck Schumer and all of the same, you know, players. They, you know, Chuck Schumer, he actually said, every American knows the Republican Party controls the White House, the Senate, the House. It's their job to keep the government open. It's their job to work with us on a way to move things forward. Adam Schiff tweeted out, Republicans control the White House, the Senate, and the House. If they are not willing or able to govern, they should get out of the way. No reason for them to shut the government down. Elizabeth Warren tweeted out, the GOP controls every branch of government. I repeat, they control the White House and Congress. They've lurched from crisis to crisis for months without funding disaster recovery, health centers, and children's health care, all while dreamers hang in the balance. This is no way to what? Govern. Yeah, so basically, the fact that the GOP controls everything and they're willing to shut it down and it's not a way to govern, that seems to be what the talking point was from them. But for the first time in my lifetime, the GOP had messaging. Go GOP, it's your birthday. It's as if they had a strategy to handle the shutdown all wrapped up way in advance. And I think that, in my opinion, that would be where I would land on my assumption because, you know, I don't think the DNC was thinking that they would go through with a shutdown. I mean, they really kind of were putting the gun to their head, and in the past, they always caved. So I would have thought he would have caved too, but they didn't this time. And how about that White House voicemail?
Thank you for calling the White House. Unfortunately, we cannot answer your call today because congressional Democrats are holding government funding, including funding for our troops and other national security priorities, hostage to an unrelated immigration debate. Due to this obstruction, the government is shut down. In the meantime, you can leave a comment for the president.
I love that. Excellent coup de grace. Excellent cherry on the ice cream and whipped topping. Now, Mick Mulvaney had a great take on the funding of his department before the shutdown. And this is how we should have approached it as far as a budget goes. Of course, we had to do a continuing resolution because we weren't in a position for a budget. But you know what? Maybe we'll get one in February. Politico reported, every quarter, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau formally requests its operating funds from the Federal Reserve. Last quarter, former Director Richard Cordray asked for $217.1 million. Cordray, an appointee of President Barack Obama, needed just $86.6 million the quarter before that. And Wednesday, President Donald Trump's acting CFPB director, Mick Mulvaney, sent his request to the Fed. He requested zero. That's awesome. You gotta love that. Mulvaney wrote that the Bureau has $177 million in the bank, enough to cover the $145 million the Bureau has budgeted for its second quarter. Cordray had maintained a reserve fund in case of overruns of emergencies, but Mulvaney said he didn't see any reason for it, since the Fed has always given the Bureau the money it needs. Mulvaney is also Trump's budget director. Noted that instead of advancing funds to the Bureau, the Fed could return them to the Treasury and reduce the deficit. Quote, while this approximately $145 million may not make much of a dent in the deficit, the men and women of the Bureau are proud to do their part to be responsible stewards of taxpayer dollars. That is awesome. That's called running an agency like a business, efficiently allocating the funding for what is needed and use the residual elsewhere. Not simply hoard the money that isn't theirs and sit on it to the tune of $32 million. But Mulvaney, who rocks in general, he also handled the messaging for the GOP during the shutdown to a degree, and he's also looking to rein his agency in, at least from what the LA Times reported. Quote, Mick Mulvaney once called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau a joke in a sad, sick kind of way. Now, as its acting director, he's in a position to change it. On Wednesday, Mulvaney announced he was launching a review of the entire operation of the Consumer Watchdog Agency created in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. The Bureau has provided Americans with billions of dollars in refunds and debt relief, often at the bank's expense. Republicans in many financial firms have complained that they have been too aggressive. Quote, in this new year and under new leadership, it is natural for the Bureau to critically examine its policies and practices to ensure they align with the Bureau's statutory mandate, said Mulvaney, a former Republican congressman who was appointed acting director by President Trump in November. The Bureau said it would formally request public input about whether it is fully fulfilling its proper and appropriate functions to the best protect the consumers. Quote, much can be done to facilitate greater consumer choice and efficient markets while vigorously enforcing consumer financial law in a way that guarantees due process. And Mulvaney said on his first day on the job back in November that he told Bureau employees, look, I'm not here to shut the place down because the law does not allow me to do that. That being said, we're going to run it differently than previous administrations. Thank the Lord for people like Mulvaney and FCC Chair Asia Pai. Now, when we get back on the other side of the break, I want to get into some additional things that were included in the continuing resolution agreement to keep the shutdown to end the shutdown and keep the government open that are not really being brought up in the news, except for in the New York Times, back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So, going back to the government shutdown, a lot of people were saying, well, do you think that this is going to result in some sort of DACA deal when we revisit this back in February, February 8th, coming up in 2018? And I kind of think, I don't know. I don't think that they would be brazen enough to do that with midterms coming up. I mean, I would be hard-pressed to find some sort of amnesty-type deal made at some point due to how politically damning it would be. I mean, although I don't have any confidence in Congress to take our desires into account, I mean, that would be the first time in a long string of betrayal from them since I can remember. But I think with the Gang of Eight meltdown years ago, Trump's nomination of beating 16 other candidates and his surprising election win simply by just touting the wall. I mean, he had a bigger hit with the wall than Pink Floyd. And how the shutdown over illegals and the possible DACA deal went down just this past weekend, this shows how politically toxic this issue is. I mean, if they want to force amnesty of any type on America, there's going to be a political house cleaning coming in the midterms. And we did get something hidden within the continuing resolution agreement. This from the New York Times. Congress is apparently not done cutting taxes, even after passing $1.5 trillion tax overhaul last year. The deal struck by Democrats and Republicans on Monday to end a brief government shutdown contains $31 billion in tax cuts, including a temporary delay in implementing three healthcare-related taxes. The healthcare taxes were all created as a part of the Affordable Care Act, where they were designed to offset the cost of expanding insurance coverage to low and middle income Americans. But many of them, such as a tax on medical devices, have remained unpopular and their implementation has been suspended or postponed before. Those delays have been preferable to lawmakers than eliminating the taxes entirely, given a total repeal would have added an estimated $310 billion to federal budget deficits over the next decade. And that's from Ms. Magina's organization. The price tag was too high to be included in the 2017 tax bill, which was limited in scope by Republicans' decision to pass the bill on party lines using budget reconciliation that only allowed for $1.5 trillion in revenue losses over a decade. The bill to end down the shutdown, which funds the government operations through February 8th and also includes a six-year reauthorization of the Children's Health Insurance Program, did not move through budget reconciliation, the parliamentary procedure that circumvents filibusters in the Senate. That allowed Republican leaders to include the delays in the health care insurance taxes without worrying about their fiscal costs, a move that drew few objections from the Democrats. So they were fine with that. A tax on medical devices, the so-called Cadillac tax, which taxes employers who offer very expensive health insurance plans, and the health insurance taxes itself, created as part of the Affordable Care Act, designed to offset expanding insurance costs, they're all delayed. So we won't even know if they're going to be included in the upcoming budget or whatever they do in February. But see, that's the thing. First off, we have to pass a freaking budget since we haven't done that in years. And I understand the theory that what has happened is party lines have been so galvanized against each other, so united on either side of the aisle and so divided between the two that every time a budget is proposed, the other side smacks it down regardless of how reasonable the budget may be. So we have to fix that. And I don't know if the midterms are going to be something that will help aid in that process. Weeding out, I mean, we got Republicans bailing left and right. I mean, how many Republicans have said that they're not going to seek re-election, Jeff Flake? You know, I mean, how many of them are looking at, how many of them have resigned over scandal? You know, a lot of Republicans that would have been incumbents are now gone. Now, we can say that for the better or for the worse, because incumbents typically have the winning advantage, but at the same time, the incumbents were progressive rhinos anyways. So we need new, fresh blood in there. And the Tea Party wave of 2010 showed that it's entirely possible. You make the American people livid to the point where they've had enough, they will throw something at you like the Tea Party. And the Tea Party was done in a nice way. You know, we can go out and protest and go to your town halls and shout you down and march on Washington, but we're going to pick up our trash at the end of it all. But then if you don't listen and you continue to shove it down our throats and then sign a bill that nobody read that basically was against us as, you know, citizens financially and was the crux behind the reason the Tea Party was created, well, then we're going to unleash a hound like Donald Trump on you, whether or not he was my choice or not. And just watch him wreck it Ralph on government. Just bash the place to death and beat up the media in the process, which has been my favorite part of the Trump administration, is the death and minimization of the media. But that's a personal, it's almost like watching, you know, Mexican wrestling or a car accident when you're driving down the road. It's like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't have wished for this, but it's kind of fun to watch. But that's happening right now. And what we have to look at is the fact that the government being shut down is not the end of the world. And the fact that there are people that believe that it was, and the fact that they are all mainly on the left, shows that there's a problem with view of government. And we've talked about this on this show quite a bit. We have discussed over and over the fact that there is a side that views government as a necessary evil, as a organizational matter and a protective umbrella over our society, but we view a higher power, and that higher power keeps us in check. That higher power makes us second guess our greed, makes us second guess our desire to be self-interested, you know, or self-centered, probably a better term. Self-interested actually drives you. Self-centeredness is where you think you should get it all at everyone else's expenses. But, you know, if you're going to shut down the government and you're going to do so like Obama did, where there's actual emails of park officials saying, oh, yeah, those terminally ill veterans that are coming out that want to see their World War II memorial. Yeah, can you set up some jersey walls and some barricades so that they can't get in? And it took more people to do that, more staff to do that than actually work at the facility. And you're going to do that to weaponize a government shutdown? You love the power of government way too much, and you are vindictive. And that vindictiveness would have been in check by a view towards natural rights, by a view towards what your creator would require of you. I mean, if you were somebody that believes in God, would you think that that was a cool idea? You think God would endorse, hey, let's put up some jersey walls and really just inconvenience these people's lives? No, that's not how we roll. And that is one of the issues that is the problem, because those same people that look to government as being the almighty power also look to it as being the source of vindication, the source of wielding judgment. That's why they worry about the Supreme Court so much. Their view of vigilantism. That's why they want to have executive bureaucracies go out and shut down groups, you know, Gibson Guitar Company, for having a different opinion, and have the EPA shut them down, or the IRS shutting down the Tea Party groups, because, you know, we don't like you guys. You shouldn't have a say, even though the First Amendment allows it. We're just going to use the IRS, the taxing authority of the country, to shut you down. And so that's where the danger comes into play. And now the shoe's on the other foot, and we are showing that a government shutdown means nothing. We are showing that conservative principles, even if implemented by somebody that's not even a conservative, because I'm serious. People get mad when I say this, but Trump isn't a conservative. He would like to think that he is, and some that don't understand the term conservatism believe that he is. And like myself, I think the term has been destroyed and is dead, but the concept behind what it originally stood for is being implemented, whether Never Trumpers want to agree and cheer for him or not. Tax cuts are happening. Regulation cuts are happening. You know, the removal of constitutionally infringing rights is happening. And whether you want to praise him and give him credit for it or not, or even Congress, you know, or whoever is involved, it's happening. And we have the opportunity to show this to the indoctrinated youth that have come out of college that think that this is all the end of the world, when a couple of years down the road, they're going to see that this economic prosperity that will be spurred by these principles put into action are due to this. And we need to frame that messaging and hone it on home so that it resonates with them, and so that it makes them rethink what they've believed and been taught since they got out of higher academia. Back in a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Welcome back. You know, I think I saw the American people just inhale the gall and the audacity of the Democrat Party to put illegal aliens ahead of citizens, ahead of military members with this government shutdown. You know, and we look at incidents like Kate Steinle, and we look at incidents where, you know, there was an incident that happened here in Virginia years ago where two teenage girls, about 17 or so, were hit by an illegal alien driving drunk and were killed. And we look at these incidents and we go, why are they getting the preferential treatment? I mean, how about this from The Blaze? Law enforcement officials arrested Alecron Nunez, 39, at his home last week. He pled not guilty Monday to 10 criminal charges, including multiple counts of rape of an intoxicated victim, forcible rape, and first-degree burglary. San Luis Obispo County District Attorney Dan Dow said during a news conference that Alecron Nunez, who held a 2015-issued California driver's license, wasn't always driving for Uber when the alleged incidents occurred, although he was hired by Uber at a certain point. Dow noted that the predators of this type would, quote, jump in front of the actual Uber driver, and they will take someone unsuspecting to their home. That's how they committed the scam. Quote, that's a way of putting someone at risk, and in this case, that's exactly what's alleged to have happened, Dow explained. He added that the female victims ranged from 19 to 22 years of age, and three of the women were intoxicated when the alleged incidents occurred, said to have taken place back in December and January. Dow said that they were searching for other victims. Quote, we actually have evidence that we've obtained in this case, some forensic cyber evidence with information that causes us to know that there are other victims out there. Investigators said that Alecron Nunez would assault women, take personal property like jewelry and mobile phones. KSBY reported that Alecron Nunez would often use a third-party payment app to collect taxi fees for Uber drives in order to disguise his identity. Alecron Nunez reportedly also used his alias, Bruno Diaz, to cover for his tracks. The network reported that Alecron Nunez was voluntarily deported from New Mexico in 2005, but returned to the U.S. illegally at an undetermined point of time. Alecron Nunez is being held on $1.47 million bail and could face life in prison if convicted on all 10 charges. His next court date is set for this week, believe it or not. But it's amazing to me how the same people that are championing these individuals, the ones that everybody ripped on Donald Trump for saying, well, you know, many of them are rapists and murderers, which, I mean, he didn't say they all were. He said many of them. And, you know, the media took that and spun it. Of course, that's what they always do. But, you know, Hillary had an interesting version of what her immigration stance was back in 2014. In a CNN town hall with Christine Amanpour in 2014, Hillary Clinton said, just because your child gets across the border, that doesn't mean the child gets to stay. In fact, let's listen to that in her own words.
And many children are fleeing from that violence.
Should they be able to stay here? It's safer.
It may be safer, but that's not the answer. I do not.
Should they be sent back?
Well, first of all, we have to provide the best emergency care we can provide. We have children 5 and 6 years old who have come up from Central America. We need to do more to provide border security in southern Mexico.
They should be sent back now.
Well, they should be sent back as soon as it can be determined who responsible adults and their families are, because there are concerns about whether all of them can be sent back. But I think all of them who can be should be reunited with their families. And just as Vice President Biden is arguing today in Central America, we've got to do more. I started this when I was secretary to deal with the violence in this region, to deal with border security. But we have to send a clear message. Just because your child gets across the border, that doesn't mean the child gets to stay. So we don't want to send a message that is contrary to our laws or will encourage more children to make that dangerous journey.
The report goes on to say that, yeah, and while President Trump has been slammed for ending the DACA program, Clinton said the same thing. She said on national television she doesn't think of children of illegal immigrants should necessarily get to stay in the United States and that they should be sent home. So the evolution towards open borders at blinding pace and speed by the left is stunning. It's right as up there with the quickness that the leap was from their Defense of Marriage Act under Bill Clinton all the way to gay marriage under Obama in his second term, when his first term he was touting a stance against it. And now they're Democrat politicians threatening violence and death to the point that they were arrested in New York over a hospitalized illegal immigrant who was set for deportation. This is from the Black Sphere. New York City councilmen and nearly 300 protesters blocked ambulances trying to get a sick person to the hospital, all in protest over an illegal alien battling deportation being held at the hospital. Two city councilmen were among nearly 20 people arrested on a Thursday afternoon in Lower Manhattan while protesting the detention of an immigrant rights activist who's battling deportation. Council members Wami Williams, Democrat Brooklyn, Yadinis Rodriguez, Democrat Manhattan, were busted while blocking an ambulance holding Ravi Ragbir on Broadway near City Hall, said Sebastian McGuire, an aide to Councilman Daniel Drum, Democrat from Queens. Williams breathlessly said, "Freedom, resist, freedom, resist. We are going to resist," while a cop held him face down on the hood of a gray car. Ravi Ragbir is the leading immigrant rights activist from an Indian descent from Trinidad and Tobago. Ragbir is the executive director of the New Sanctuary Coalition of New York City and was recently detained by ICE authorities during a routine check-in. Ragbir arrived in the U.S. from Trinidad and Tobago in 1991 on a visitor's visa, and according to New York Immigration Coalition, Ragbir has lived with the threat of deportation for nearly a decade as a result of a 16-year-old conviction for wire fraud. He was placed into removal proceedings in 2006 and spent 22 months in immigration detention before being released in February 2008. Ragbir's immigration case has undergone extensive judicial review at multiple levels of the nation's judicial system, including both immigration courts and federal appeals courts. In addition to Ragbir's immigration violations, he has had previous federal convictions for conspiracy to commit wire fraud, rendering him an aggravated felon. And so these individuals, these councilmen, were willing to go to jail, and they were willing to allow a sick patient on his way to possibly perishing, you know, on the way to the hospital, to die by blocking the ambulance. And it's amazing to me that they afford this kind of courtesy to those who broke into the country illegally. But there is a new push. a push to crack down on high-level immigrant activists. I always made the joke, you know, you really want to catch these people? Mayday. Go on out in the streets when they're marching in our streets, holding up signs saying, hey, I'm an illegal alien. Boom, admission of guilt. Take them, throw them in the wagon, book them, and then deport them on out of here. But the Daily Caller had a piece that was talking about how this is going on, how they're targeting high-level illegal immigrant activists. Immigration authorities have detained in recent weeks two prominent activists who themselves are illegal immigrants, demonstrating the Trump administration's commitment to expand the pool of deportable aliens. The arrested men have openly lived in the U.S. for years and have until recently enjoyed de facto immunity from deportation thanks to their status as high-profile immigrants' rights activists. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency officials have denied the arrests are politically motivated, but they are clearly a show that immigrant agents are now emboldened to arrest even the most connected of illegal immigrants. Both men are leaders of the New Sanctuary Coalition of New York, a network of religious and social organizations that works to prevent the detention and deportation of illegal immigrants. ICE officials first detained John Montreave, a Haitian national who had lived in the U.S. since 1986, despite having served a prison term for drug possession and which resulted in the deportation order. He co-founded the New Sanctuary Coalition, was taken into custody in January near his home in Queens, touching off a firestorm of protest. Activists accuse ICE of breaking the understanding that Montreave will not be arrested while he appealed his order of removal. Despite the public outcry, ICE deported him to Haiti on Tuesday. In 2011, the New York field office of ICE granted Ragbir, who we were talking about earlier, a stay of removal. Then, last April, the Trump administration granted an extension of that stay, but only till January 19th. Ragbir's fellow immigration activists have painted his arrest as arbitrary and cruel detention. So, we know that the crackdown has got to happen. The wall has got to happen, because if not, the Trump people, like we talked about last week and the week before that, Trump's base will fry him if he does not make sure a border wall of some sort and some sort of illegal alien enforcement is implemented at a level that would provide us peace of mind for what's going on. But this is what the Democrats were willing to allow the government to shut down for individuals who would, you know, kill and rape and use the cover of an Uber driver account and have fraudulent money accounts to receive money for payment to take personal property. These are the people that they're running cover for in order to change the electorate, in order to get citizens that will then vote for them. And or if they're not citizens, they skew the census enough to add more representatives into the states that which they control, giving them higher advantage on elections. Back in a moment.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So the shutdown is effectively over because Democrats caved.
White House is taking a victory lap after Democrats in the Senate caved and voted to reopen the government.
They got a deal to make a deal, maybe.
Democrats, on Monday, after a three-day shutdown, have relented, accepted nearly all White House terms.
Guys, that's why the Democratic base is clearly... No, it's a terrible deal.
It seemed like everybody was losing. It seemed like Democrats maybe lost this fight.
Democrats lost the shutdown war.
Democrats wanted a deal on DACA, but all they got was a promise.
They are getting their butts kicked.
Truth is, the Dems got spooked and the GOP got a boost.
The progressive groups are very unhappy.
But we know the DACA folks lost, Democrats lost.
The Democrats lost their leverage, at least in this next window, until the next shutdown.
Schumer's sellout. The perception is he got rolled and the left is not happy.
I'm just not totally sure what Democrats got here.
Why did they shut down the government in the first place?
There is some anger on the left that the Democrats, you know, their mind may have caved on this shutdown.
We are outraged that millions of people went out into the streets in support of Dreamers and Senate Democrats chose to vote against Dreamers.
Leader Schumer, what one thing did he get? you know, from Republicans to justify shutting down the government in the first place.
They agreed to Democrats to fund the government through February 8th in exchange for a promise from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell that they would have a debate and a vote on DACA. In other words, for nothing.
People are saying Democrats caved and they surrendered.
A lot of your members say that Leader Schumer caved. Did he?
Do you think Senator Chuck Schumer caved?
Did Senate Democrats cave?
Another Senate aide told NBC News, quote, "We caved. We lost."
If Democrats don't want to fight, then let's find some people who will.
Is it fair to say that the shutdown, the government shutdown, backfired for Democrats?
In Washington, there are winners and losers. Democrats wanted a DACA fix. They didn't get it. The Democrats lost.
So judging by that montage, the media claim the Schumer shutdown was a colossal fail. Hat tip to the Washington Free Beacon for putting that together. But you know who else thought it was a colossal fail? The Dreamers. And they were livid enough to take the Schumer government shutdown and turn it into a Schumer slumber shutdown as they went to his house and protested at night, trying to interrupt his rest.
Trump won't let us dream. We won't let him sleep. If Trump won't let us dream, we won't let him sleep. If Trump won't.
And why is there always a drum circle? And why is it always filled with the metronome deficient burnouts who have no rhythm? Just an observation from a former professional percussionist. But they've even taken their migrant sound machine over to Disneyland because I guess now they want to become citizens of the land of make-believe. They will probably have a better shot over there, at least until they close the park down at 10 p.m. According to the LA Times, DACA recipients were blocking the entrance of Disneyland out of protest. Beneficiaries of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program and their allies temporarily blocked a vehicle entrance to Disneyland during Monday's vote to reopen the government. The DACA recipients, commonly called Dreamers, stood in a crosswalk at South Harbor Boulevard around 10 a.m. and blocked buses from entering the Anaheim theme park. 15 protesters were quickly removed by law enforcement officers and were relocated to a sidewalk where they held signs and chanted, "No dream, no deal." And what are the rhinos and Democrats doing about all this? They're looking to form a coalition to push DACA through in February. From the New York Times, a bipartisan group of senators who intervened to help the end of the government shutdown now faces an even more formidable task, freeing the Senate and perhaps Washington from its dysfunctional rut. In sidestepping Senate leaders of both parties, members of the group have taken it upon themselves to not only quickly resolve an immigration dispute that has long defied answers, it's a pragmatic group of centrists, that's what they like to say, from both parties, a mix of red state Democrats like Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, independent-minded conservative Republicans like Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, and Jeff Flake, who's a giant flake, a possible presidential prospect in Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota, and past vice presidential nominee, the disastrous Tim Kaine, and I can say that because I am from Virginia. Senior Republican committee leaders such as Senators Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Lamar Alexander, Bob Corker, I mean, the new senator from Alabama, Doug Jones. I mean, you can take those names and kind of come up with your own assumptions, but with names like that, we can be sure that they have the best interest of the American people at mind. Let's hope Trump doesn't just sign whatever hits his desk by these fools, because if that happens, you're going to hear me rail on him like I did last week. So we've heard the media's shocking admission of defeat over this, but let's take a look at how the American people viewed the shutdown. Americans blame congressional Democrats more than President Trump or congressional Republicans for the government shutdown this weekend, according to NBC News SurveyMonkey poll. In the poll, 39% of the Americans said Democrats deserve the lion's share of the blame for the shutdown, about 4 in 10 people, with 38% blaming Trump. Just 18% said most of the blame lies with congressional Republicans who control both chambers of Congress. So the stats show that Democrats shot themselves in the foot, even though it's a close run in the polls. But we need to keep in mind NBC, we got to take them with a grain of salt over their political bias. And also, SurveyMonkey does many of these polls with online polling, and we don't know if this is one of those issues, which may not be scientifically accurate with the results. But if the media is claiming the loss of the Dems, there's something to be said for the damage control and narrative shifts. Given all that, maybe the Dems were thinking the GOP would just cave before the shutdown and give in the final hour. And where some would say that we didn't get anything out of the deal, and we may get a DACA deal, by the shady rhinos and Democrat caucus in February, we did get those initial, you know, additional tax cuts. So we have to really look into that. The bullet speed leap from illegal immigrant, people that were against illegal immigration to full-throated acceptance of anyone who accidentally trips over the borderline and falls into the American jurisdiction by the left is stunning. But they will be underestimating the silent majority and what they really want by those people who back in 2013 surrounded buses of illegal immigration immigrants in California back in 2013 to the point where they had to turn around and drive out of there. I mean, how does this play into the midterms? We've got the political version of the football two-minute warning, where it looks as though it's a short length of time, but it's actually a lifetime. And leads have been reversed. Games have been won by teams who are losing in under 2 minutes remaining. But it seems as though the score is even ahead and edging towards the Republicans, even though the Obamacare repeal failed. That would have tanked the GOP on that alone. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. Follow me on Twitter at Rants Out Loud. You can check out the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spreaker, Google Play Music, TuneIn app, iHeartRadio, or get the free Adrian Slade Show Roku channel if you have a Roku device. Get it in your streaming store. Tune into the show on Talk America Radio on the Liberty Channel Wednesday afternoons, 1 p.m., Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Saturday evening at 10 p.m., and then on the Talk America Radio Justice Channel, Tuesday evening, 6 p.m., Saturday evening at 7 p.m., and Sunday morning at 8 a.m. We'll see you next time.